You're listening to the Camp Nation podcast. Find us online at campnation.ca.
Welcome to the Camp Nation podcast number 7, the one where no one's at home. Today's episode features our discussion on Scott Arizala's tri-state presentation, You're Fired, and other difficult management conversations. Plus, your host picks of the week. Thanks for listening.
Good day and welcome to Camp Nation for the fourth week of March 2010. My name is Travis Allison. I'm the social media manager at Our Kids Media, and I was a camp director for 15 years at Glenmore Camp and Cairn, which are camps in Muskoka, about 2 hours north of Toronto. And at this point, I'd like to take a moment and just ask my co-hosts to introduce themselves.
Hi, my name's Dan. I'm the director of Camp Alianda, which is at Frost Valley YMCA. It's a year-round camping, conferencing, education facility up in the Catskill Mountains of New York.
And hi, my name is Gabrielle Rail, and I'm one of the directors at Camp Waro, which is an all-girls summer camp situated in the Laurentians in Quebec. And I'm currently chatting with you guys from North Carolina, from the Outer Banks.
And my name is Scott Arizala. I am a summer camp consultant and trainer. I work for myself. My company is called The Camp Counselor. And I'm also a camp director for a camp for seriously ill kids in the Philadelphia area called Dragonfly Forest.
So Dan and Scott are also in a pretty unique spot today.
Yeah, sorry, I forgot to mention that. We're at the Tri-State ACA conference in Atlantic City. And so the keynote is actually going on right now. So we feel a little bit bad, but we definitely wanted to make sure we were there for the podcast as well. But it's been a great conference so far. Definitely a lot of great sessions going on.
Dude, I didn't know you were missing the Fonz.
Oh, no. We're not missing the Fonz. We're missing the other keynote. Oh. The Fonz is Friday. We would have had to reschedule for that, so don't worry about that. Henry Winkler pulls the card.
Awesome. Great. Well, we'll open up today with some news about the camping and recreation industry, and there's a couple of things that we have in here. And, Gab, why don't you start us off on this?
Sure. So a couple of podcasts ago, we were talking about home loneliness, and we also mentioned Chris Thurber's interview on CBC. So I thought I'd just post the link on Definitely Not the Opera. And basically, this is an hour-long interview about missing home. And the first part is with Chris Thurber, and he talks about, gives tips and tricks to parents. And I thought this would be something that would be really neat for camp directors to post on their own websites. And sometimes parents like to hear from official people when it comes to their children. And so on home loneliness and anxiety and all that kind of stuff. So Definitely Not the Opera.
Wonderful. Dan, what do you got?
There's this article a few weeks ago. Basically, it was talking as a U.S. survey finds a sharp drop in children's bullying. And so they've actually been noticing that there's been from 2003 to 2008, it went from 22% bullying going on to 15% bullying being reported. And they're finding the same thing with youth assault as well, too. It's really interesting because I feel every conference we get more sensitive to bullying and dive more into it. And I was sitting in Joel Haber's session this morning on cyberbullying, and just the stories are coming out. Maybe it's more because everyone's discussing it, but it's awesome to see that the efforts of people really trying to address bullying actually working and really kind of taking it head on instead of it just kind of growing.
That's awesome.
Did it suggest why bullying was going down?
They didn't go too much into it. They talked a lot about programs that were, going on with training new teachers and kind of making sure that, people are addressing stuff and making sure that adults are present. But that was really kind of the biggest thing, was just finding that if you're with the kids actually display good behavior. It's a big shocker in that case. But
I think it's fascinating, actually, to go on a little bit about this article that Dan found about bullying. You can liken it to the incidence of, for example, diagnoses around ADD or ADHD. It would be really interesting to see any kind of study that talked about, is the incidence of bullying actually going up? Is it going down? Is it staying the same? Or are we, as adults, diagnosing isn't the right word. Are we seeing it? Are we more present? Are we monitoring more? Do we have more sort of helicopter parents, seeing these things? It's just an interesting discussion because is it actually happening more or are we just more sensitive to it?
Great. Thank you very much. Those are good articles. And taking a look at both of them before we get going. So thanks for posting them. I actually did come up with a link that I thought was interesting and helpful. And I posted it on the Camp Nation blog at campnation.ca. And it was a link to the new OK Go video, which to me would be the most fun camp activity ever. I was exactly that kind of kid. I'm exactly that kind of adult. that sort of stuff is amazing to me. And it is a giant Rube Goldberg machine, which is set off with dominoes, and that trips something else, which spins a hammer, which there's been lots of Rube Goldberg videos that have been awesome. There's an old Honda commercial that took them months to film, and I read a cool article about that OK Go video, which also took them 3 months to do. But I thought it would be just an amazing video to shoot, to set this whole thing up, spend a day with kids, because each little section involves something different. You could sort of keep getting their attention back, like you wouldn't lose their attention for a long activity. And you have a whole planning thing where you're sitting down and communicating about, you know, stuff you want to do. And then to film the whole thing and accomplish it all in one take would be such an amazing sense of accomplishment that I think it'd be a great camp activity.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Have you guys seen the video?
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. I definitely, after watching it, tried to figure out how we could do that. First in the office, just kind of playing around, but also in camp as well, too. So, yeah, it's definitely a fun video.
Yeah. It reminds me, one time for my group of buddies that I went to high school with and a couple of camp friends that, you know, became close with us, we all went away on a snowboarding trip for our 30th birthday where we all took lessons and learned to snowboard. And one night we spent hours building a track for a remote-controlled car to go around this whole chalet that we'd rented, like upstairs, over guitar cases. We spent a night at it, and it's one of the most fun nights of my entire life.
I was just trying to picture a bunch of girls doing that.
you don't think they would, Kat?
Be like, dude, know what we did last night? It was amazing. There was this track. It was awesome.
Well, it was good for me.
So, the snowboarding part sounds awesome.
Yeah, of course. And it was good. Thank you for your links. Those are great. So we have the great pleasure of having Scott Arizala with us, and it's nice that I've seen Scott speak before and always loved your session, Scott, and it's a great privilege to have you here.
Thank you.
And we thought since you were here that we'd get you to sort of lead us in a discussion about one of your topics that you presented today at Tri-State.
Yeah, I thought it might be an interesting opportunity for us to, you know, sort of continue the conversation. A lot of times in sessions, it's a little bit more one way than, you know, an educator would want. So I thought this might be a nice opportunity for me to open up with you three about some of your ideas and you know, sort of your take on some of these pieces. Basically, a session I ran this morning was called You're Fired and Other Difficult Management Conversations. And it's exactly what it sounded like. It's you know, a way that we can sort of build these conversations, which happen to every camp director all the time, you know, using some real basic principles and some sort of building blocks within each conversation. I'm obviously understanding that every situation is different, and sort of what comes at camp directors over the course of the summer is sort of new and unique and different just about every time. So I'll sort of present with you guys the two sides of what I presented this morning, and I'd love to just open it up for discussion. Basically, what I said was, you know, before you even have any leadership challenges or any sort of difficult management moments, there are some things that I was sort of calling prerequisites that I think need to be in place that will help you in each of those moments. And the four that I put in place were accessibility, approachability, being a team player, and clear communication. Obviously, with accessibility and approachability, you know, it's not only about sort of knowing where you are as far as a staff member coming to find their supervisor, but, you know, feeling good about, you know, when they do find you and sort of what happens there. The team player piece, you know, it's they need to know that you'd be on the ground doing what it is that they do. And then obviously with, you know, clear communication, it's really being able to carefully listen when any staff member do approach you, and then being able to really express yourself clearly, whether that's with expectations or directions or whatever the case may be. So I'd love to hear from the three of you about either sort of anything around those pieces or anything else that you think which should belong on that list as far as things that we need to do as leaders at camp to be ready for challenges and like I was saying this morning, difficult management moments.
Well, I'll start us off then. Great ideas. And we had taken a hard look at that. And like every camp director in the spring, you just want to make sure you have all the things in place to be as approachable as possible. And I really like your idea, Scott, of designing it all up front so that the staff knows the expectations are clear and all those sorts of things. One of the pieces of feedback that we got, I co-directed with my wife, Beth, and her camp name was Topaz and my camp name was Zoic, and everybody sort of shortened it up to Topazoic. One of the pieces of feedback, especially when the first couple of years I was counseling on my own, is that people were finding that I was just intimidating to talk to. And I didn't want to be that way to staff, and I sure didn't want to be that way to kids. And so what we ended up doing is setting aside a specific time. Usually for us, we would say between 3 and 4 o'clock in an afternoon, Monday to Friday, is Topazoic time. And that means that unless it's an emergency, that time is available. Whether it's staff members who want to go out and on the aqua jump with us, they want to play a card game, we'd have kids who'd come to us and who come and, you know, want to play cards with us or dress up or go for tea, any of those sorts of things. And by setting aside that time and posting it, our office was right in the main center of camp in the courtyard where everyone gathered for everything. We just posted right on our window, 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock, Topazoic time, you come and find us. And that seemed to work really well.
So it was having that set time that really kind of opened that door for people then?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously the thing when you're a camp director is you always look busy because you're always busy. And so by saying, I give you permission to interrupt me at this point, and I ask you to interrupt me at this point, then that was a good way to make people do it, make people come and talk to us and spend time with us.
And how long did it take for Topazoic time to catch on?
I sort of feel like you'd have to reintroduce it every year. Like the first week of the summer, everybody's so excited about everything that, you know, the staff are so pumped to try out the stuff that they just learned. And the kids are excited because they just got out of school and everybody's sort of at high energy for week one. So you'd never get a lot of customers in week one. And then you sort of keep, you know, reintroducing the idea with the staff every week. And eventually you'd get stuff going to the point that when one group of kids would see us doing cool stuff with another cabin, then that would be, you know, enough to get them to want to do stuff with the directors as well. It took a while to catch on. And
I think one of the things
in terms of the communication, it really just said, this is a time when we are open to you. And it changed how people perceived us.
Yeah. I think one of the things that you spoke to, Travis, in that particular piece is something that's so important for us to understand about, you know, I think people want to sort of blame it on the generation of kids working today and all this kind of stuff. But I'm going to make the argument that this has never really changed. That what I just heard you talk about is not only creating a space and a time that people could find you, but by reintroducing it all the time, you're finding them. I mean, a lot of camp directors I know anyways talk about, oh, I have an open door policy. Well, so what? You know, staff people don't come to your door. They don't ask for help, at least not at the level that we want them to. And I think that concept or that idea that you're talking about as far as not only reintroducing them, but, you know, whenever I'm talking to staff or to leaders and directors, I say, you got to take the door to them. You know, you've got to, you know, push out and go and have the meetings and have the discussions. And I think that's by what you were saying, Travis, reintroducing it, you're sort of that constant reminder that you're there and sort of making sure you're getting out, you know, to have these conversations and whatever.
And just before I pass it on to the others, there was one other quick part of that is our position in camp is that we were right in center camp. The courtyard was where everybody gathered for everything. And my desk faced the window. It was right there. So a couple of funny thing happens. When it was a sunny day, you couldn't see in the office. People would stop by, stand right outside my window and check their hair. But the other thing was that I was at my desk, and especially sort of at night, if I was working at my desk when kids were brushing their teeth, everybody sort of getting ready for bed, that sort of thing, I was sitting there with a light on. They could see me really well, and the kids would just stop and talk to me. And it would be the same thing with staff. Like, it was just, the positioning was so good that people would be like, hey, how's it going? Because I was right there and available.
You'd start making fishbowl offices you could sell to people, which is the giant fishbowl.
Yeah.
You sit in.
And I think it's hard to, as camp directors, we're constantly talking to staff members, and we're constantly talking to parents and campers, and you feel like you are connecting with a lot of people. But the reality is those guys that are doing the work, and they're not complaining, and they're, you know, they're out there and trying their best, they won't necessarily come to you. And by making yourself available and visibly available, like you did, Travis, that sort of creates a feeling of you're there. And even if people didn't take that camp director afternoon that you provided for them, just knowing that it's there for you is sometimes enough. Just knowing that I have a special time that I can go speak to my camp directors, you know, is enough, you know, that you've set it aside for them.
Yeah, and part of the discussion this morning, and that whenever I've done any topics around this kind of piece, is always, okay, so now what do you do with that? If you can create that accessibility and that approachability, that's ideal. I think that's where the other two concepts of being a real team player, of doing your share, of being there to support and be a resource for the counselors and staff, as well as communicating very clearly what your expectations are, what the expectations of parents are, and then, of course, sort of listening very carefully to what your staff have to say and the feedback. I mean, I think those are the sort of obvious next steps.
Definitely. One of the things I loved about the session this morning is that I've actually had the privilege to work for Scott. So Scott used to work at Frost Valley and was definitely one of the first people I met that made me believe that camping could be a career. Prior to Scott, some of the directors I worked for, there was always a dissonance between the camp counselors and the directors. And the dissonance was really there in the relationship sense. Like, you know, you knew they cared about your work, but you didn't know they cared about you as a person. And when Scott came in, like, he really kind of role modeled of like, no, like, I want to hear about your college. I want to hear about this and all that sort of thing. And it's definitely something that I've really taken to heart. And this morning, sitting in Scott's session, he was telling a story about how one of his counselors was being really nonchalant about always coming in late. And he's like, well, I'll go buy you a watch then. And now you're going to make sure to come on time. And that's something that I've definitely adopted, of the sense of like, I really do care. I will buy you that alarm clock if you're not going to come to breakfast. I'll walk them right over to the store and be like, oh yeah, no, I'll take care of it, and hit it in such a sincere way instead of hitting it up in a condescending tone of like, oh, you don't have an alarm clock. No, that's not a problem, man. We could definitely get that for you. And it throws people off so much in a good way. All of a sudden it kind of drops this guard of, oh my God, you know, my boss is furious at me for coming late. And now it's like, oh man, he really wants me to succeed. He really wants me to do well. And he really wants me to take accountability for what's going on. And I found that's really kind of been the biggest thing. Like, I got married right in August, right after camp ended, which was amusing in its own right. But to have 17-year-olds asking me, you know, about how the wedding was coming along. And I know they have no concept of you know, anything of a wedding at all. Like, they just know what they see in the movies. But, like, I would have these conversations with, you know, some of the 17, 18, 19-year-olds that had no concept. And I would share, you know, them, like, you know, the little tidbits that I could, and I would tell my wife, you know, what tidbits I shared to make sure we're on the same page as well. But yeah, it's just kind of keeping that relationship. I hope none of them are listening now and think I was being fake at that time, but but I know a few of them do. But yeah, it's just kind of keeping that relationship and making them see you as a person, not just as their supervisor, but also kind of balancing it out and not being immature and trying to sink to their level on the immaturity side.
Yeah, there's so many of these great ideas that I think go into this preparedness for really difficult management or even very awkward conversations that maybe aren't you're fired, but are definitely, you know, we've all had it. Any camp director that's listening, the four of us, you know, that are doing the podcast right now, we've all had those moments at camp where we walk away from a conversation and where you basically walk away and you're saying, wow, I can't believe I actually just had that conversation. And so what I would love to transition into is, okay, so it's clear that there are a bunch of things that we have to do. And let's just be honest with each other. There are many more things than we're able to discuss now that should sort of go on that list. And I think what Dan was saying is absolutely right, in that so much of that is about building a relationship and building the knowledge base about who we are. But what do these conversations sound like? I've outlined four or five sort of pieces of these. And again, I'd love to hear, you know, from you guys about what you think sort of belongs sort of inside some of these steps, or if there's something missing, what else could we do? What I talked about this morning was starting with preparation phase of you're really trying to think to yourself, what's this conversation going to sound like? What does this person expect? Have they gotten critical feedback before? You know, they're not necessarily answers to a lot of these kinds of questions, but taking a minute to prepare yourself to think about some of these things, I think, is key. Once we step into the conversation, there's this whole idea about basically reviewing facts, stating facts very calmly from your end, listening very carefully to the staff's version. And in a minute, I would love to talk to you all, or if one of you guys want to bring this up right now, I've just used one of the most loaded words at camp that we could use, which is facts, right? I mean, we all know as camp people that perception and reality often have nothing to do with each other and don't really matter, because it really is all about perception. But really this idea of getting all the facts clear and out there. Then, of course, moving into stating some of your goals for any kind of behavior change, what needs to happen differently and why, asking about or developing how you're going to make some of these behavior changes, and then, of course, talking about sort of the consequences, what's going to happen if this doesn't happen, and then doing any kind of follow-up with these young people about making sure that some of these things happen and that they're getting the right kind of support.
I mean, I think that sounds great. I'm ready to end this conversation now. I mean, that's perfect.
Done.
I love how you've laid it out, and it's, you know, it's so clear and crisp. And I think that as a camp director, it doesn't always happen this way. But if you do have to terminate a contract, that both parties agree that it's the best thing to do for both parties. Because usually if the camp counselor isn't fulfilling his or her job requirements, they don't feel very good about themselves. And there's probably many reasons why they're not capable of fulfilling it. And a lot of the time it has to do with some sort of personal issues that are going on, and it's blocking them from doing what they have to do. Because, you know, we all have rigorous interviewing processes, and our pre-camp or staff training is also rigorous for that purpose. You know, 9 times out of 10, there's something that's going on with a staff member. And sometimes it does have to do with the camp, and sometimes it's just not a right fit, or sometimes it has to do with them and things that are going on at home. And it sounds like, you know, going through facts and goals and where do we want the behavior changes, you know, to go, and what does it look like when it's successful, what does it look like when it's not successful, is very clear. And if a staff member can't get to that point, hopefully that's a place where you can both can decide that we should terminate this contract, and it's, you know, both parties are agreed. And obviously sometimes that doesn't happen, but hopefully sort of the steps that you have laid out, it sounds like to me that that's what most of the times that's what would happen.
Let me actually pose a question to you all, because I think, Gab, you're right. In the ideal world, yeah, absolutely. And not even in the ideal world, I think a lot of the times you're right. While sometimes it might take some talking to get a young person there who might be having not necessarily the most mature reaction to whatever it is you're discussing, I definitely agree that I think that the sort of writing is on the wall at a lot of points. Let me pose a question to the three of you, though. What happens when we get to that space of, okay, this is what I've been noticing, this is what I've been hearing, however you all in your individual ways present some of these facts, quote unquote, what the issues are, and you get that young person, that 17, 18, 19-year-old camp counselor, who has every excuse in the world, just isn't seeing the quote unquote facts the way you are, and is basically arguing with you up and down about that this is even an issue. How do you turn the corner from that moment to this is the behavior change I need to see, without sounding condescending, without saying, well, I, you know, you're just wrong, or any of those sort of not necessarily safe sort of deal breaker statements that would stop the conversation? I mean, how do you manage it in those moments, those really difficult times that a young person is sort of butting up against you like that?
For me, I've definitely found that giving them a little bit of time definitely helps, in the sense of, like, you know, presenting the situation and the facts and everything kind of going in that sense, and then going, okay, clearly we're not seeing eye to eye on this. Why don't we do this? Why don't we take a little bit of a break? I don't want you to go back to working with kids. I think you just need a little bit of time to think as well. And I would prefer, you know, just take a little bit more time while we meet back in a few hours, you know, go wherever you want on camp, and just come on back to it. And it kind of gives that time for them to reflect, because I know from just working with so many different people that sometimes people listen to the emotion, no matter how much you try to just stick to the facts, they just still pick up on some form of emotion and will stick to that. And then once they get over the fact that, you know, you're not trying to insult them or not trying to, to pick on them, but really trying to address an issue, they kind of go back to it. But I definitely had a few instances this summer of like, look, you know, like I hear what you're saying, but this is how it is. So we're gonna take a break. We're gonna come back, but we're gonna go start right back where we started and what we do. It's worked out for the best in all the conversations I've had.
I like that, Dan. That's really nice. I think sometimes when I'm chatting with some of my staff members where it's difficult, and this might sound a little cheesy, but we do it outside behind my cabin. It's a nice little area, and I have tea, and we chat over tea. And I work in an all-girls camp, though, right? But
boys like tea, too.
And I know that's true.
Although Americans don't really, so maybe it's a Canadian thing.
Maybe some coffee or juice. Usually the conversation is much more of, you know, what's going on with them. What is their experience at camp like? Are they enjoying themselves? How are their bunk mates? And we go through that type of conversation instead of going directly towards the facts and then start talking about perhaps, you know, let's just say they're not doing so well down at canoeing and start bringing up canoeing and how things are going and just have an open dialogue about how things are going and then really express, which is the reality. My goal is that they feel successful in their job and that they feel challenged and that they do well. But with some of these things that are going on, that's not the reality. And, you know, what are your perceptions and what are your feelings on that? I try to have more of a conversation with them about their overall camp experience and not necessarily just about what's happening at canoeing, because we might be hitting into something else. Maybe there's something frustrating, and then by the time he or she gets to canoeing, they're not on their, you know, their best behavior. So sort of trying to create it really more about them and less about the pinpoints of what's going on at camp with them.
Cool. Well, I'll jump in too. When I think about this, I think less about sort of what I would say and more, maybe more how I would say it. And I have two thoughts. One is I had to learn to be really sensitive to other people. I'm a very logical person. And so for me, presenting things logically is the answer. I had to learn to make sure that I was respecting other people's feelings in conversations, that logic isn't always the answer to things. And that was a hard lesson for me. I'm also a big person. Like, I have to always think about dealing with staff members to not be intimidating. And so in these situations, I would often have a staff member in a chair in my office and sit on the floor just so that there's not an automatic, they don't get their defenses up because they're intimidated of me. So it's something I was always conscious of. And the other thing is that I'm a True Colors facilitator, and I don't know if any of the three of you have done the True Colors personality thing before.
Yep.
I haven't, but it sounds familiar of other stuff I've done.
Yeah.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, it's like Myers-Briggs, but it's sort of simplified. In a lot of ways, it's campified. Like, the symbols are a little easier to understand than INFJ or ENTP.
What are your colors?
I'm green-orange, about 50-50 on each. So four colors. Blue people are sort of live in the emotional world and thrive on connections with others, really sensitive to others. This is a crazy simplification, but they're the really sensitive people, and you naturally end up with a lot of blue people at camp. Gold people are the organizers, the ones that are happiest when things are laid out for them. They have a lot of respect for history and tradition, and all of that gives them, you know, makes them happy. And green people, green's my strongest color, but orange is pretty close. Green people are really logical, love to learn, are really driven by new experiences and that. But some people perceive them as cold. And then oranges are the in-your-face camp people. They're the ones that make up crazy games. You can all picture what an orange camp person is because they're the one that's always in front, always too loud, the ones that the kids love to climb on, that sort of thing. So part of the whole True Colors process is talking about how to deal with people, how to recognize the others' true colors, and then deal with them in a specific way. My wife, Beth, is also a True Colors facilitator and also often talks about what it's like being the maximum number of blue, which she is, with a very green person. So my wife, I've had to just learn to be more expressive about things, but she laughs and often tells a story how I took out of the book, How to Succeed with Your Bright Blue Friends, so the strongest blue, and so that I could sort of give myself a mental checklist in a day of how to, you know, be the best person I could with Beth. And she laughs at that because, she's driven by those emotions and those connections, and it's so natural to her. And for me, it was a lesson to be learned. So the reason I tell that story is I would consider what this person's coming into this conversation with. So another part of the lesson of True Colors is how to recognize a person who's strong in one color and what they look like when they're out of esteem, when they're not feeling good about themselves. You grow to see that is their way of showing to the world that they're out of esteem, that they're not feeling good about themselves, what they're doing, et cetera. And then it gives you some tools to talk to them in a language that makes sense to them and try to guide them back to feeling good about themselves. So it probably doesn't answer your question, Scott, in real specifics about what I would say, but I think it's how I would say it. Each situation, what I would say would be different, but those are the things that I consider when I think about having those conversations.
Yeah, no, I think that was perfect, and that was actually for all three of you. That's an incredible addition to some of the conversation that we had this morning. And what's interesting for me, and we can kind of wrap it up with this, is that we talked a lot during the session this morning about how, you know, at the end of the day, you can't, and sort of where I started at the beginning was saying how being objective is sort of a trick question. I mean, there's not a whole lot of objectivity, if any at all. It really is sort of subjective by nature. And what we can talk about facts all we want, but the reality is at the end of the day, you're really looking for what's this other person's experience. And oftentimes when that runs completely counter to the choices and the behaviors that you're trying to check as their manager and say, or as their supervisor and say, hey, these things aren't okay. Utilizing all the different strategies that you guys just said, creating the relationships with them, understanding who they are and coming at them. Like Gab said, really having a conversation and letting them get there as far as them doing some discovery around those pieces. I think all of those things gets at their experience. And I think it's perfectly appropriate in these conversations to then say, and I'm not going to sit here and argue or negate your experience. It's important and it's powerful. It's sort of like an and statement as opposed to a but statement. So there's all these other pieces going on. There's this other perception out there. There's, kids have been left unsupervised or things aren't going well down at canoeing or whatever the case may be. And so bridging those two and saying there is nothing that anybody else can do to sort of change these other ideas and perceptions and whatnot out there. Only you can. So moving then into that, so what are you going to do differently, or how are you going to change your behavior so that those things change? I think that really humanizes it. That really empowers staff. It puts the onus of change exactly where it belongs, and it allows us all to be sensitive to other people's feelings. The last thing I want to say is that I often will tell people, I'll say out loud in sessions or whatever, hey, are my feelings for me just as real as your feelings are for you? And of course the answer is yes. And then I always say, well, is it the same if I'm 8 years old or 10 years old or 14 years old or whatever? And obviously that's the case. Well, it's also true if I'm 19 years old or 21 years old. My experiences and my feelings for me are just as real. And to have my supervisor, all of you folks, come at me in a way that empowers me and legitimizes that feeling, I think ultimately will lead to me, sort of as Gab said, wanting to be more successful and wanting to be more confident and wanting to actually make that behavior change.
Amazing.
I'm just jotting down a whole bunch of notes, Scott, as you're talking. Awesome.
I'll send you the PDF.
That's great.
Well, that was great. Thank you, Scott, for sort of leading us down that path. I think it's a really good topic and a hard one. It's hard. It's a thing that takes a lot of practice, and sometimes that practice has to accumulate over years if you're lucky. You don't have to have a lot of your fired conversations. So thanks.
Oh, you're welcome. That was fun.
Awesome. And so I think we'll wrap things up today with our picks of the week. And for those listening, picks of the week for us is a tool that we use, or in my case, used to use, that makes you a better camp director or improves life at camp in some way. And we'll just go through it in alphabetical order, and we'll start again with Dan.
So this week I picked Good to Great by Jim Collins. And so my CEO, Jerry Honkowski, loves this book, and this is actually how I found out about this book. He tried to create a book club within the organization, and we a bunch of us read this book together. And it is a corporate book. It does have a corporate focus, which is, you say that word around camp directors and they automatically freak out, like, no, you know, there is a business side to it in that sense. It breaks it down into what is the difference between a good company and a great company. And I think the biggest thing for all of us is when we create a camp culture, we want one to succeed far beyond our terms at camp, as well as we want something that will carry on from the kids all the way up. And so Good to Great has a lot of parallels that actually go really well with camping, of just, you know, everything from hiring the right people to using the best of technology, which I definitely think we're advocates for. I don't know how many iPhone jokes. We didn't make one yet. Right now, I guess, this is the first iPhone reference we've made in the episode. But
there's definitely an app for that, too.
Yes, yeah. But yeah, it's just a fantastic book. I definitely encourage people. For kind of the time of the year, it might be a better fall read when you're not kind of getting into high gear, but you're thinking about how to kind of shift your camp around a little bit. But it's a great read.
Good. Thanks, Dan. And Gab, what do you got?
My pick of the week is Peppermint and Cinnamon. So Peppermint and Cinnamon are two natural resources you can use to help your staff when they're in an afternoon slump, maybe during staff training. So sometimes we put out peppermint candies at the table if we have an indoor session, or have some cinnamon tea, and that sort of helps perk them up a little bit. Of course, we do a little bit of a game beforehand, but sometimes, just even around 4 o'clock, it's very difficult to get their eyes back open again. And this is a natural way of trying to get out of that afternoon slump.
Awesome. And it always happens on that day during staff training when it's 34 degrees.
Yeah.
And it's just sweltering. So I don't know what temperature 34 is. Be probably 95 or 98.
Yeah.
And you get those afternoons in June when you're trying to do training and it is a million. That's awesome.
It definitely helps, yeah.
Right on. Scott, do you have a pick?
I do, actually. And my pick of the week is a book just like Dan's. It's called Nurture Shock. It's by two writers, Poe Bronson and Ashley Merriman. And unlike Dan's, though, I would suggest reading this book now, before this summer. I'm a self-proclaimed dork when it comes to the kind of books that I read. I love texty, academic types of books. This is definitely in that realm. However, for all of you who are not dork readers like myself, they are wonderful writers. And so they've been able to turn a lot of research and stuff around kids into really fascinating reads. And the whole book is basically about debunking some of the myths, some of the strategies, some of the ideas that exist out there that we think are sort of best practices with kids. The best sort of example I can give from the book is they talk a lot about praise, and how about we're coming on a whole generation here who have been told that they can do anything and that they're special, but they've never been told specifically why. And so that hollow praise has done a lot of disservice or has really worked in the opposite direction. So I found just about something on every page that I think would be useful for camp directors to understand, and then, of course, to employ, whether that's during the summer or as pieces to their trainings or whatever.
Awesome. That's always good. I always love getting a new book to read. And my pick of the week, I wrote this joke in our show notes, is that it's not actually an iPhone app or something for my Mac, which I think maybe you have been shooting 100% for Mac-related applications. This actually got from Gary Forster, this idea, and put it to good use. And Gary recommended that you buy as many Rubbermaid farm carts as you can and have them around camp. And they're not cheap. In Canada, they're probably between $600 and $800 a piece. And they're a big wheelbarrow, basically, with two wheels so it doesn't tip over. It has bike tires, so it's nice and big to roll over stuff easily. And we use them in the spring for hauling brush, cleaning up leaves, and that sort of stuff. We use them in the summer at Cairn. One of the programs is a real wilderness program, and parents basically park at the parking lot right at the edge of the bush and then have to hike their kids into the units, these tent units that they stay in, And so we take four of them over for opening days that we can, the counselor can load the kids' stuff into this thing, carry a whole 2 weeks worth of stuff in this farm cart, and just take it up to the unit. And they've been great. We love them.
Nice.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's my pick. So I think that takes us to the end. Once again, we want to say thanks to Scott for being here. And what I'd like to do is we'll go in reverse order this time and do some plugs just so you can find out some more about people. So I'll start since I am the last in the alphabet. I Twitter professionally at twitter.com/rkidsnet. And my personal Twitter is twitter.com/zoic. And I probably tend to more campy stuff on my personal Twitter than the work one. But the work one, I try to balance it out with a couple of other different things. So our organization is ArtKids Media, and you can find out about us at artkidsmedia.com. And show notes for this show on our new professional camp staff focused blog at campnation.ca. Scott, where can we find you?
You can find me at thecampcounselor.com. That's my website. You can also find my book at smorethancamp.com. Or you can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/thecampcounselor, spelled C-O-U-N-S-L-R.
Awesome. Gab?
And you can find me at gabriellerail.com. That has a bunch of fun camp info there. And I'm trying to be good about Twittering, but I'm not. But I'm saying my Twitter account just so I maybe put some personal pressure. So / Gabrielle Rail, and I'll be posting something cool soon on that.
And Dan?
I blog at danlovescamp.com, and I Twitter at twitter.com/danlovescamp as well. And then I also work for Frost Valley YMCA, so it's just frostvalley.org. I'm presenting tomorrow, but by the time everyone hears that, they definitely will be well over. So I'm presenting at the 125th, What the Internet is Not Evil. And basically it's just all about the positive effects of kids being online and how there are some and how you should acknowledge them.
I like Wonderful. That, Dan.
Yes, yes.
I like that.
Cam, who was on the podcast earlier, he definitely yesterday he was sitting next to somebody who was a technology hater, if you will. And he was like, yeah, they would have hated you. it was really funny.
I saw that in your Twitter. That was awesome. A couple quick things before we go. You can go to thecampdirector.com, and there's still an ongoing discussion book club for camp directors about Seth Godin's Lynchpin book. And I just finished the audio version. I think I'm going to read the print because I listened to the audio version in the car, and I can't really take enough notes to contribute to the discussion well enough. But great book. Great, great book. And I know Dan's been involved in that discussion.
Yeah. It's been great, the discussion, Jen, because Jen really kicks off with an awesome post that really gets you thinking about, if you couldn't link it to the camp world already, like definitely gets you thinking of pretty easy ways to kind of get involved with it. And yeah, it's been awesome to kind of go back and forth with seeing people's different perspectives on it and really kind of making being a camp counselor into an art.
Good. The other quick thing is the Art Kids video contest, the Camp Nation video contest, and Dan was kind enough to put up a poster at Tri-State, which again will be too late for you to see, but he posted a picture of the poster he put up, that we are hosting a video contest which will allow camp directors to show off the skills of their staff. And it's going to be a video contest where staff will submit a video and sort of get voted up or down. And what we're looking for is good singers, performers. We want to take those people who have been, you know, recording in their dorm rooms off their video cam and give them some exposure. And we think by really focusing on camp people, we give camp directors a chance to show off their staff, show the great skills that are part of the camp experience when they come to their camps. So that's going to launch April 1st, and people go to facebook.com/ourkidsgotocamp and become a fan. That's sort of how we're coordinating all the information about that. Our other quick thing is to give thanks to our long-suffering audio editor, Donovan Romanek. And he's at whereitsatproductions.ca. He does a great job, as we still haven't mastered audio, but we're getting there. So we thank Don for all the work that he does. And I thank you all for meeting up with me on Skype today. So to our listeners, thanks so much for downloading the Camp Nation podcast. Dan was saying that he was getting lots of good feedback at Tri-State, and I really want to say thank you to everybody because you've been very patient. We've changed the name a bunch of times. I screwed up the iTunes feed, but I think we're on a good path now. And so thanks for all your feedback. All the good retweets are bringing us good attention. So that's it for me. Thanks very much. Thanks to the three of you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you guys so much for inviting me. It was a fun time.
Good. It was a real pleasure.
This Camp Nation podcast was brought to you by Our Kids Go to Camp magazine and the camps.ca online summer camp directory. Thanks for listening.